Want to talk to you about time, space, and energy in terms of experience. Name of this talk could also be, have, and do. An interrelationship now exists between theta, its goals, self-determinism, space-time energy, and experience, behavior, and activity, which make this subject much too easy. And I want to ask you, to keep it quiet, the fact that it's gotten awfully easy. Don't go out and tell what I'm going to tell you tonight to Homo sapiens as he walks around, because it all becomes too plain to him. Don't by any means tell a physicist about this, because he's got to be an expert to go on earning his living. And don't make the horrible mistake when you're processing a pre-clear to do it in the first 3 minutes, or he'll feel that he didn't need processing. That's why we're running in now at this time with these new techniques, an assessment, a good, thorough assessment before every session. That's so some the session will take up some time, you see. And now, on first glance, I want you to regard this material with great awe. Actually, you probably should. They've been digging at it now for I don't know how long. But I want you to regard it with great awe and take it so seriously and regard it with such awe and consider its importance so great that you'll never be able to use it. I mean, if you can just get serious enough about this material now, we can guarantee for what I first said there will take place, that it will remain so difficult and so forth that you too can be an authority. And so there's two ways to go about this. Now, if you become very, very serious and concentrate very, very hard on this and know that this must be difficult, because we are actually throughout dealing with factors which only recently were solved in a lower strata in physics. And if you regard this with sufficient importance and awe, then you'll never be able to use it, and I won't have any competition on it. I'm the only person that I know today is very unfortunate. Who never seems to have any failure with these techniques. I just never seem to have that happen. Of course, that has mostly to do with luck. Luck. It isn't because I observe the pre-clear. Or it isn't that I use the technique exactly as it is written down. Those two points wouldn't have anything to do with it. The thing's probably pure luck. Or maybe it's reputation or something like that. That probably has much to do with it. So again, it leaves me, I say that because the first class hasn't got any of its certificates yet. And the reason it hasn't got any of its certificates yet is because it's got an unsolved case in its midst. And I'm going to get awful bored with this. And I'm going to take just exactly the principles which were taught the first class and solve this case some afternoon when we got 2 or 3 minutes. And it's just as ridiculous as that to have an unsolved case. It's just that ridiculous. It's just also ridiculous, anybody being in this subject very long, keep on wearing glasses. You shouldn't wear glasses. There's no point in wearing glasses. Do you realize that glasses actually absorb a considerable percentage of the photons entering? They're hard. They're hard to see through. And I don't know, you want to put up barriers for yourself or something, that's all right. But now, sidestepping all this persiflage, let's get down to something terribly serious, which is the anatomy of universes. This is what's known as a small subject, the anatomy of universes. Universes are composed of space, time, and energy. And these factors combining make objects and matter in general. Now, that is the anatomy of a universe. And that's all you have to know about a universe. And that's obviously all we need to know about a universe, because that's all that modern physics knows about one. I'll go over that again. This is the actual scope today, stated in a round sentence. The anatomy of a universe is as follows. It's space, time, and energy, which combining forms matter. So you have matter, energy, space, and time as the component parts of the universe. Now I'll explain this in the way one of my college professors would have explained it back there about 20 years ago, man, boy. I had some very, very good professors, by the way. I have no peers. No peers whatsoever. 95% of them were incomprehensible, and the other 5% wouldn't communicate. My professor of mathematics was supposed to have been the only man in the United States who could understand the Einstein theory. He sat there proudly understanding the Einstein theory. He sat there for years doing that. But don't ever go into him and say, I'm sorry this happened. I'm awfully sorry this happened. But in analytics, there are 5 unnecessary steps in solving slope formulas. Don't say anything like that. No, you have just reached up upon the altar and torn down all the sacred vessels and bitten holes in them and dented them and thrown them out into the barnyard. He would say at that moment, I think it is best for you to use those 5 steps. They are there for a purpose. I didn't understand him at first until I at last realized that they were there for a purpose. To confuse people. That's true. That's true. There's no subject under the sun which cannot be refined. No subject under the sun which cannot be simplified. And there's no subject under the sun which can't be made more complex. Now, just because the last is true is no reason to go on doing it. But that also applies to Scientology. How people watch Scientology and see it simplifying. That's wrong. It ought to be becoming more complex, but it's not doing that. It's simplifying. It's simplifying. And today, it is possible to say that the anatomy of the universe, or the anatomy of any universe, is composed of these 4 simple elements. Now, as one of my professors would have said, matter, that's energy. That's energy in space and time, energy which has combined in atoms and molecules in space and time. I see. Well, now, what's energy? Energy, that is motion. That's change in space. That's motion. And change in space requires time. And when this change in space occurs, the manifestation of its occurrence is energy. You say, thank you. Now, what's space? Space is that area occupied by the energy which is changing in time. You say, well, thank you very much, but what's time? Time is that manifestation of change in space which can produce energy. You say, excuse me, I didn't quite know where we came in on this rat race. It seems to me that we keep saying A, B, C, D, A, B, C, D. And it just seems to be a circle. Now, somewhere, somebody's got to find a hole where he can get into this exclusive circle which defies all breakdown. Of course, the second you start to say breaking down anything like a universe, everybody gasps in horror. Everybody knows there's such a thing as conservation of energy. Einstein's last paper, you ought to get that sometime. It's some light reading. It's something like 26 pages solid. 20 pages, something like that, solid figures. By the way, have you seen that? That's a gorgeous thing. One of my friends got a hold of it. And somebody mimeographed it at Princeton or something of the sort. It's not been published widely. And it goes page after page, and you've got these, just symbols and cube roots of square roots all divided by zero time, and they're times constants, and then all of a sudden there'll be a big S, and then there'll be a small s, and that has to do with space, but that is space within space. And then you'll see something over here that's the strangest letter out of any alphabet you ever saw, and that's the fourth dimension. It keeps sticking its head in, and when he gets all the way down to the bottom of the thing, he says triumphantly, conservation of energy. He said, now we have identified time, space, and energy in terms of conservation of energy. Now, that might not be exactly a rendition of Einstein's paper. That's not a direct quote. But when it comes to the actual last line, that's pretty close. It's sort of as if he said, now look, you, we got this all buttoned up. And we don't want any tampering from here on out because we have absolutely proven at this level an interrelationship which is so interlocked and so close between space, energy, time, and matter that nobody will ever break through the cordon. Well, fortunately, I put my foot in the wrong place not too long ago and broke through. And all of a sudden, time, space, and energy became related to self-determinism. We suddenly found out that the goal of theta, and this works, by the way, as a test of any theory, is does it work? It's all right to get a theory. I can get lots of theories. But the point is, let's get one that functions. Well, 1951, there was a state of mess theory, and the state of mess theory just seems to function. And there wasn't any reason for it. It just seems to function. Now, the theta mess theory is refined to this degree. We have on one echelon something of no time, no motion, no space, nothing. The nothing is nothing that ever anybody conceived. Nobody ever conceived a nothing as theta. But isn't it interesting that that nothing thing has a potentiality and a capability? The closed circuit, of course, has been in existence now for quite some time. That is, evaluation of space, time, energy, and matter all by itself. And you can expect things to get into that state of affairs. They sort of evaluate everything. A person starts to describe cats, and he starts to describe cats in terms of cats, in terms of cats, in terms of cats, and you keep. And if he were saying all this time, wumps in terms of wumps in terms of wumps, and it's bigger than a wump, you see, I mean, but it's just a little bit longer than a wump, and you keep saying, what's a wump? And he'd say, what? A wump? That's very simple. A wump is, not quite so much wump. And you'd find him quite bogged down logically. Now, you can do that same trick by saying a wump and a wag and a stug and a moog. And you say, what is a wump? Well, it's a stag and a moog as modified by a wag. And you could just go around in circles, and they might as well be those words. Really, they might as well be those words because they don't interconnect otherwise. They're just four symbols, and each symbol is evaluated by the other symbols. Well, I got stuck one night on something or other. Something came up, and this theta mess theory came up. Statics and kinetics. Theta is a static. What is a static? We have the theory in the physical sciences that energy and physics and all of those things are statics and kinetics. They're sciences of static and kinetic stuff. Well, all right, let's take something that they say is static. And they know it isn't static, by the way. Nobody fools that. And you put this down this razor, you say it's a static, doesn't move. There it is. Oh, boy, is that thing going like mad. That has eight separate motions just being connected to Earth. You know that thing is traveling 1,000 miles an hour? It's fantastic, the number of speeds and motions. In another direction, it's going 12.5 miles a second. It doesn't sound like it's very static to me. It's changing location, space, and time with rapidity. But even more than that, it's only held there by an equilibrium of forces. In other words, it requires forces to hold this thing in equilibrium of force. Now let's look at its real, actual anatomy. And we find out that it's composed of material which is composed of atoms and molecules. A Swiss cheese is very, very solid compared to a piece of matter. You start looking at a piece of matter and you start swishing it around in cyclotrons or something of the sort, and you take a few electrons and push it around, and then you shoot them this way and that, and you've got this steel bar. They don't hit anything. They just went right on through that time, and then the next time they hit something and so on. It's almost as if you were firing a 22 bullet through the solar system and then say, well, the solar system is solid. I hit Earth, didn't I? Well, that wouldn't quite hold true. Now, quite in addition to that, you see the planets in motion, you see the sun in motion, and all of that. Similarly, according to theory, which nobody has proven, atoms and molecules in this. It's just a good theory. It doesn't necessarily hold all the way across the boards. In science, in the science of chemistry and the science of physics, they have entirely different structure patterns which don't compare to each other today on account of nuclear physics. What works as an atom for a chemist does not work as an atom for a physicist, and vice versa, but they're evidently both working with matter. They have different pictures of the same object, and they're quite different. But they work for them, so that shows that we're working with a theory. Now, that atom, which, you see that atom right on the end there? that little one. All right. Now, that atom is doing a migration of some sort into this, or it may be doing a migration off. And if 2 or 3 years from now we came along, probably the atom that's there has been worked clear over to there. In other words, this thing is not static at all. Even as it sits at a state of rest, we find that it is full of motion. Let's take something else. You ever hear of a cosmic ray? Cosmic ray goes through almost anything. You have something like, I don't know what the figure is, something like 12 cosmic rays are bursting inside you every hour or every minute or every second. There's something very explosive going on. And each one of them releases a megavolt. And first time I read this, I, you couldn't possibly be here if this were taking place. That's what they assign mutation to. It's evident, though. You can watch an area with a photographic plate. That is to say, just expose a photographic plate that will only record cosmic rays, and you get these explosions in a certain area. Jokingly enough, if you're running the genetic line track, there is an engram back there called a cosmic ray. And if you start running this on a free clear, you have a picnic. You don't tell him what this thing is. It's just simply an explosion. That's all. He was so tiny on the genetic line at the time this thing took place that a cosmic ray explosion looked like the whole firmament blowing up to him. And it's explosions on the genetic line. It's very amusing. I just throw that in sideways. You find that on E-meters. If sometime you haven't got anything better to do with a pre-clear and he's almost gone anywhere or something, run the cosmic ray just for amusement. The point here is that a true static would not have any of these properties. It couldn't have any of these properties. It might have qualities or capabilities or potentialities, but to have potentialities, it is evident. Because this theory has worked out so beautifully and it's working out and taking in so much territory in 7-league boots, and preclears are recovering at such remarkable speed with the use of this theory that it must have some validity. And if it has some validity, we have this on our hands. We have this fact. It does not require time, space, energy, matter, wavelength, substance in order to have potential. Theta can do something. Theta has a potential. It can locate energy and matter in space and time. It has a potential. And yet, it doesn't have a beingness. It has a potential beingness. It doesn't have anything, though, in terms of matter and energy, space and time. So, right there, as I was telling you the other night, there's our Q level. Now, that's way up there. That's inexplicable at the moment for one reason only. A datum must be evaluated by a datum of comparable magnitude. The God, the devil. We understand God because of the devil. We understand this, we understand that. These are double data. The basic unit of the universe is two, not one. And we suddenly announce Theta houses its potentiality, the location of matter and energy in space and time, and can as well create space and time. Well, once we say that, and the same time we say it has no wavelength, it, boy, we're really describing a beast here. This thing couldn't possibly have any position in the real universe, and sure enough, it doesn't. But we play this static. That is a true static, you see? And we play this true static against a kinetic. Space, time, energy, and matter, and what do we get? Life, life forms, and energy and matter itself. It should become very interesting right about that point. The potentialities of this thing actually create energy and matter. Now, it doesn't say that it can destroy out of existence time, space, energy, and matter, but it can create into existence, evidently, time, space, energy, and matter. It can do that. Well, if it can do that, it doesn't necessarily have to destroy them out of existence, and you'd get your explanation of the messed universe being an expanding universe and the law of conservation of energy being true. The law of conservation of energy does not say that energy cannot be created. It just says the created energy doesn't dissipate. It translates. It becomes something else. All right. Now, here we have this no-motion thing playing against that. Well, does that have just to do with life? Oh, no, it doesn't. The electrician in forming the first chaps who did the very wonderful work in forming the basic laws of electricity did well. However, any investigator is liable to overlook some simplicity. It's very easy to get complex, but it's not very easy to get simple for these people, evidently. And someday somebody can say that about me, I guess, and they probably will. So, but the point is this, that in the basic and elementary laws of electricity, they had left something undescribed. It was there all the time. They used it all the time, but they didn't say it was there. Now you wonder how that came about. Well, it's just so obvious. But they never connected it up on a gradient scale of logic to find out where the datum led. And so they never considered the datum of any importance. Everybody knows in order to generate an electrical current that you have a plus terminal and a minus terminal, and you put a magnetic field in between, and as you shift the magnetic field between the plus terminal and the minus terminal, you get an electrical flow. Everybody knows that, and that's all you need. That's all you need. Every basic textbook on electricity, whether it's in high school or in electronics laboratory or in the hands or in the library of Einstein, happens to be an error. That is not all you need, not even vaguely all you need. You take an alternating current in order to have, you just start looking this over, in order to have a flow, you've got to have a plus minus and a minus plus at the same time you have a plus and a minus. It's just one extra curve on that line. We let that go by the boards for a moment because that is subject to question. Now, that subject to question, we could argue about that, but you look it over in the light of what I'm going to give you here, and you'll see that this is not subject to question, but it looks just too idiotically simple. And those of you who do not know basic electricity will say, well, that's perfectly natural, and I'm sure that could not have been omitted. Well, I assure you that it has been omitted, because it changes the formula, the basic formula known as the alternating current formula in graphs. Here is a motor. There we take a motor. Now, there sits the motor, and there's the terminal. Let's take these two things, and we'll call these terminals. Now, we put a magnetic field between these two terminals. This is a plus terminal, this is a minus terminal. We put a magnetic field between. What happens when you take a plus side of the magnet and the minus side of the magnet, and you just suddenly turn them loose? They'll snap together, won't they? Well, according to present design, that is exactly what would happen to terminals. You can't make electricity with the present formulas. It's just that everybody has seen this generator, and they keep looking at the generator, and they know what a generator looks like, and then they go and look at the formulas, and then they make one. But if you took a savage out in the bush, and he just took the formulas all by themselves, and he says, gee, that's wonderful, he'll take this terminal, and he'll take this terminal, he'll lay them together, and he'll put a magnetic field between them, and they'll go clink. And he'll say, all right, now I'll turn on the electric light. He said, that's very strange. It says right here in the book, all you have to do is impose a magnetic field. All right, I'll do that again. We'll lay these two down here. All right, now we'll put a magnetic field between the two of them and then turn on this electric light again. Clink. Okay. There must be something wrong. White men are crazy. We always knew white men are crazy. Shoot the next one, have him for dinner. We have done at this moment with modern electronics. What's left out of this? What is left out of this? The base of the motor. Now, the base of the terminals. That sounds to you terribly idiotic. It is idiotic. It is idiotic, but boy, it certainly took us with seven-league boots into a lot more knowingness than we ever had before. All of a sudden, we looked at this and said, where is the base described? No place. How important is the base? Terminal, fixed to the base. We put a magnetic field between these two terminals, and they will stay fixed. They do not collapse. And is it a plus terminal and a minus terminal together which is giving us an interplay, or is it effort and matter? Are we putting mechanical energy up against this base in order to get electricity? Yes, we sure are. We're pouring effort in between these two terminals, and the effort translates into energy. And the reason we can do this is because we're working the dichotomy between effort and matter. Effort and matter. And so we get an electrical flow. But here's this base. It holds these two terminals apart. Unless these two terminals are held apart, in other words, unless they are located in time and space, unless, as you turn that electrical field, it imposes time on this, and then time on this, and time on this, and time on this, and time on this, unless this base holds them apart and says, space, 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 all the time, you'll get no flow. And what happens out of this? So help me, the anatomy of electricity falls out in our laps. And we don't have to go on saying till the end of time, well, the first thing you know about electricity, which is what they say in the textbooks, what first thing you know about electricity is that nobody knows what electricity is. We can at least know a little bit about what electricity is. Electricity is a dichotomy which comes about through locating things in time and space. Now, if you have two poles, you might say, a plus and a minus, and they're located alternately in time and space, you're going to get current flow. And this becomes very interesting because it means that the theta of all things, theta, in the form of a theta, actually sets up facsimiles. He can not only set up a facsimile, he can dream up and set up a facsimile in time and space, which he has dreamed up, evidently, and then set up another facsimile and get an energy discharge between, just like an electric motor. But on what wavelength? Way up here, see? It's not the kind of a wavelength that lights this electric light. It's another kind of a wavelength. It's way up there. And evidently, that doesn't require very much anything. But here's this fabulous characteristic. Now let's take this motor base, which is, we'll talk about the base, not this ashtray here, we'll talk about the base, which is under the steam generator, not too far distant from here, which is holding the terminals of that big generator apart. We'll talk about that base. It's located here, it's probably not a few miles at the most, from here. We'll talk about that base. Now, because there's time and space taking place there, and an alternation of time and space, you pour some coal in the thing, see, that gives you heat, and that forces some effort onto a rod, and because those terminals are held there, every time that thing turns over, it's grinding out an enforcement of time and space on the dichotomy of effort and matter. Effort and matter, effort and matter, effort and matter gives you time. Effort, matter, effort, matter, effort, matter, space, 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 space. And all the time that's happening, it raises the devil along these electrical lines, and that agitation which you see up there is the agitation which pours through as a result thereof. Because the goal of a static is to be a static, and this static is very badly being upset. Well, let's talk about that base. What's that base fastened to? It's fastened to a concrete floor. What's that concrete floor fastened to? That's fastened to a planet called Earth. What's Earth fastened to? Well, believe me, Earth's really fastened. It's got centrifugal and centripetal forces. It is held in equilibrium in a nearly circular, but actually elliptical. It's very nearly circular. You'd be surprised how close to a circle Earth makes around the sun. It's called an ellipse, almost for politeness' sake. And it swings around the sun, and the gravity of the sun and the gravity of Earth interlock one against the other, and we have Earth held in place, but severely held in place. And the sun is held in place by the general magnetism, a gravity, you might say, between itself, other suns, and its force vectors as it travels through space. It is bound on a certain course in relationship to the hub of the universe. And it is part of a galaxy which is going in a certain direction in a certain part of the universe. Now, they talk about this universe being expanding. That's cute. That's very cute. That is a wonderful way of just skipping the whole point. How could you have some space that was expanding? Well, it had to be expanding in relationship to more space. And that it had to be expanding in relationship to other space. And you get this cat chasing his tail proposition around of matter is energy which is congealed in space and time and all that sort of thing. Well, we're not interested in that. Let's take a look at this and say that there's a finite limit on the universe. We have no right to say that. Well, they just say there is. There's a finite limit on this here universe that we've got here, and it doesn't go on forever in all directions. And let's look at an axiom. This axiom works out. We find everywhere we look that absolutes are really unobtainable. You can't even attain absolute zero. Guys have gotten awfully close to absolute zero. They've really gotten things cold. But absolute zero would be absolute motionlessness, and they haven't attained it yet. All right. It's unobtainable, so let's say infinity is unobtainable, too. Doggone it, somewhere theta could be said to be holding a conceived time and space to achieve an energy and a matter. And that makes the material universe. Now, that solves very nicely. I mean, we can say that very nicely. Actually, we've only removed the problem one step further on. But we do have a connection here. We do have a definite connection. Here's the base of this generator down there in the electric light plant, and the base of that generator leads right straight back to theta, as we have described theta. The second I saw this, oh, my God, I said, there's self-determinism. Aha, self-determinism. Yep, a bow. And it sure didn't take very long to take an ice pick to that little cat chase the tail, matter, energy, space, and time, and just bust up that happy little group because we had a higher Q. And any time you have a higher Q and you've adequately described a higher Q, even if you've postulated or theorized that it's there, if it is a workable Q, you can evaluate things below that level. And we stepped up and all of a sudden got the qualities of something which was above the level of matter, energy, space, and time. And we got what the quality was, and we look around at a man, and let's take a look at this man, and we see that this man is trying to be self-determined. That's he's very interested in being. And let's find out why people are sick. We've already found this out. Their self-determinism has been upset in this quarter of that, and when we relieve that, they get well. Empirical. All done by theory, but empirical evidence kept bearing it out. Now, let's take this definition. Let's take this definition of self-determinism. We say self-determinism is the effort of an individual to attain the goals of theta. What are the goals of theta? Goals of theta seem to be the ability to impose matter and energy, time and space. Not just on time and space. It can create, theta can create, conserve, alter, and I'm not sure about the last. It would hold on every other theory, but I'm just not sure about it, and destroy matter, energy, time, and space. That could be said to be a goal of theta. A goal of theta. And you'll find universes running in cycles. You'll find a single lifespan running in a cycle. And everywhere you look, you find everything has beneath it the common denominator of this cycle of creation, growth, decay, and death. And that is the repeated, continuous cycle everywhere you look. And let's look at energy, and we'll find energy has three characteristics: start, change, and stop. And that compares to creation, all the other things, alteration, and death. And we find that's what energy does. It can start, it can change, and it can stop. Oh, boy, are these things starting to fit together very nicely. Now let's see if that applies to an individual. Does it apply to an individual to such a degree that by using the definition of self-determinism in times of the highest electronics so far extant here, do we suddenly get a pre-clear? Weller, faster. Oh, boy, do we. By about 10,000 to 1. It's just fabulous. The technique works. You can ask any early first class. They'll tell you, well, yes, standard operating procedures works. Yeah, placing things, yeah. You try it yourself. That works. That's how you get a fellow well. That's how he becomes more self-determined. That's how he becomes able to handle this material universe. He goes on up the line. Now, let's take another one. Creative processing. Creative processing. Scientology 8008. The rehabilitation of the individual's own universe and the reduction of the messed universe in terms of importance to him. Now, let's take that process. Let's look at it as a good, valid process. Yes, we can take creative processing all by itself and make a person well. Just like that. Isn't that fascinating? Don't have to pay any attention to this messed universe at all. Tells you immediately there's tons of universes. They have to be. They just have to be. All right, you're in the high and rarefied air of theory. But that theory actually boils down to something very simple. The static and kinetic. You have a no motion acting against an all motion. And a no motion acting against an all motion gives you energy. And what's motion? It's time and space. What are the capabilities of theta? Creation, conservation, alteration, perhaps destruction, of matter and energy and time and space. What's self-determinism? Same as theta. And so, if you want action, if you want these other things, can we just shift these factors around just willy-nilly and fit them this way and fit them that way and fit them any other way and invent six processes now and 100 tomorrow and you can't think of a good one, just remember your definition and say, well, it ought to work this way, zing, zing, and bang, break a case, sure. Yeah, that's very interesting. All of a sudden, we burst out into the sunshine of a very, very clear concept. Highest potentiality of theta is evidently the creation and management of universes. The way you create and manage a universe is you invent some space, and then you have to invent some time. And between the time and the space, you have to have something in them. So you put something in them, and to do that, you have to use energy, and that congeal that into matter, and you've got a universe. And that's very simple to do. Nothing much about this, and there's actually no limitations upon the creation of this. I mean, that's all you do. Now, you just take a writer sitting at his desk, he's pounding a typewriter, and so what's he doing? Inventing time and space and energy and matter and so on. Only trouble is he takes it out and he compares it to the real universe, and the real universe says, I'm real because I can kick your shins in, but that cliff you just invented in that story, it isn't even vaguely going to hurt anybody. And the fellow's been beaten down like this for an awful long space of time, so he doesn't bother to fix up his cliffs so that if you kick them, they kick back. This doesn't say he can't. Doesn't say he can either. Just doesn't say he can't. Now, when you guide this poor writer who has been comparing his universe toward the mess universe, the mess universe has been saying, I'm real. Yours is not. Everybody tells him that, by the way. That all criticism and everything sums down to this. What you just thought of is not real, because here is the real universe, and it's much bigger and tougher, and it's an ally of mine, and we're going to crush you with it. If you're going to get into an involved argument, criticism of arts, invalidation of Joe Louis as a boxer, the way you wipe out companies with stocks and bond sales, or any of these things, you'll have somebody rushing in with a conclusive proven fact which crushes out an imagined or unsupported fact. And there you go. So this universe was designed on the beautiful basis of you'd better agree with me or else. And so is that a basic design of any universe? Otherwise it won't hold together. But of course, very few universes get so slopped over as this one seems to have done. Now this universe, of course, doesn't occupy all the space there is. And it doesn't occupy all the time there is. You could compose another universe, and it wouldn't go at right angles to this universe, because this universe, if you knew the truth of it, isn't here. But boy, it sure got a way to say it's real. This universe really isn't here. It's an illusion. The most interesting part about it is, as hard as physicists have worked to prove in natural history all sorts of things, and so on, natural philosophy, they used to call it. Yeah, that's right. Way up since the time of Aristotle. One of the things they really concentrated on proving all the way along the thing, materialism. Real. It's real. It's real. It's real. And they kept pointing at it. They kept saying, it's real. It's real. It's real. It's real. And then their finger went through. And when you got up to that stage, why... You walk up to a physicist, he doesn't know whether he's a monk or a scientist today. Because he has proven conclusively that what he's working with really isn't there. You get Sir James Jane and others, and they think, and they finally say it finally boils down to a thought, as near as we can think it out. It's very fascinating, but that is physics. It's evolution has been toward the direction of demonstrating with great conclusiveness that they are working very materialistic with something that is quite illusory and really isn't there. But if you agreed and everybody else agreed, and if you're, as a theta being, if you were forced to agree continually that it was there and it was there, do you realize that you're able to create time and space? So if you create time and space, if you've agreed and agreed and agreed with the mesh universe, the time and space which you create is the mesh universe time and space. The energy which you find in the mesh universe, you can create it and put it there. And so you all sit around, and here's the mesh universe, create time and space, and oh boy, we mustn't get out of agreement on this. Let's put it in there very carefully. I bet if one of you went away and stayed on a desert island for several years and stayed very much out of connection with things and there was nothing there, it's like a sun cycle or something to demonstrate things to you, you'd come back and find that you have missed it. You'd probably get back here in 1954 when it ought to be 1955 or something, and it'd be very embarrassing to him. Men get very anxious about this. Even Robinson Crusoe, with no calendars, time clocks, or anything to worry about, carefully kept the passing of each day. Great. Awful concern about this. Horrible anxiety. That's because you don't think anymore you could create one. Of course, you've got to keep this one. Now, the funny part of it is there really is no real concern about that, because this universe is very easy to find. There are too many people concentrating on this moment of time and space. What happens to your preclear when you send him back down the track? He can create the time and space of his past. He can put it in there. Or he can read it off actual energy, which is sort of suspended. Now, what's all this have to do with be, have, and do? Well, it has a great deal to do with be, have, and do. Because when you translate now from self-determinism into matter, energy, space, and time, you can get a direct result in terms of experience. You can say, time is, in terms of experience. Beingness is, in terms of experience. Doingness, then, is, in terms of experience. And if you can do those tricks, And if I could communicate it to him, you wouldn't be wandering around the fog about what time is. But what's time if this sort of goes by? I mean, only it doesn't go by because you're right here. Well, it's change, you see, in space. Well, clocks. Big relief, you see, is a watches. Yeah, watches, they. Then you stop and think for a moment. Those hands are in the same place. They're just making a motion in space. Closest we can get to time is motion. Gee, as close as we can get to time is motion. That's obvious, isn't it? Very, very obvious. Well, that's not as close as you can get to time. I'll tell you how close you can get to time. Motion. But that really isn't the way you ought to say it. What you ought to say is time is the illusory word which you put up to describe as the existence of motion. And the truth of the matter is time isn't there at all. But motion is. What's motion? Well, that's great. I mean, you go around in circles like this just for hours and hours and get dizzier and dizzier and wouldn't do your pre-clear any good at all. And that's what Homo sapiens is doing. He's been agreeing to this motion, agreeing to this space, agreeing to this time, agreeing to this motion, agreeing to this space, agreeing to this time, until he doesn't feel he can create anything anymore. And so he just goes on agreeing and agreeing. And how sick can he get? How sick can he get? Just take at random a strata through the society and pick up your real sequence, and what do you find? He has agreed almost 100%. How do you know he's agreed 100%? Because he has no more illusions of his own. He has no more hopes. He has no more dreams. He's a sick guy. In fact, if you want to find that fellow, I invite you to go out to the graveyard, because he's dead. He is no longer a living organism. Now, you want to find how bad off your pre-clear is. As a matter of fact, you can just take a look at a pre-clear. And you know how bad off he is. How thoroughly he is agreeing with the material universe. And the more thoroughly he has agreed with the material universe, the worse he's going to be. That's horrible, isn't it? Because several reasons for this. Agreement, by the way, is a one-way flow. You start to do something to the universe, and the universe says, gonna do something to me, huh? Bap! you go out, you're going to play, you're going to be a steamboat, something, and you're a little kid, and he goes running down the street, choo-choo-choo-choo-choo-choo, crash. Well, he didn't run into a dock, and he hasn't got any fenders out. He fell on concrete, and it skinned his knee. He said, I'm a steamboat, and the messed universe says, you're a little boy in a very destructible body. We've got you taped. We've convinced you. And every time this little boy tried to put up a big illusion, every time he tried to do this, what happened to him? Messed universe said, mm-mm. And yet, horribly enough, the only parts of the messed universe that are habitable, the only parts of the messed universe which have any meaning to life itself, are those parts which have been conquered by life. The lichen, the moss, in operation together in terms of soil. And you get some soil, then you get some little plants, and pretty soon, so on. It'd only be a psychotic that would devote his lifetime to making a pet out of a pebble. He would not be interested in any life form or anything of the sort. He'd just have this pebble, and this pebble he petted. And this was... Life is fondest of life. And only life graces this universe, really. The stark, utter chill of the outer dark above the ionosphere in the Heaviside layer is quite emphatic. Quite emphatic. It's cold up there. All right. Now, what's an illusion? An illusion's a universe. In embryo, unformed, thin, gauzy. But gee, a universe of the illusion characteristic, theoretically,
could be as strong and as tough and as resistant as this stuff, theoretically. And what is the thing which delights audiences most? Stage magic. People are always showing that something solid has just turned up where it shouldn't be. He can create matter. Fascinating. He can also reduce space. So on. These are the tricks of the magician. Audiences are delighted with them. Why? If the audience is just supposed to agree with the material universe, they get all mad at that magician. He just keeps on telling them you can disagree with the material universe. All right, let's look this over very carefully and not strain too hard on it, because it's awfully easy. And the definitions which are necessary to an auditor and to a very good understanding of Scientology are that self-determinism tends to attain the goals of theta. The goals of theta are to achieve the potentialities of theta, and this is the creation of matter and energy and space and time, and the creation of space and time in which to create matter and energy. And that puts you up above the level of space, time, matter, and energy, and we can get off of that racetrack for the first time. And how do you get off the racetrack? Waiting to hear about this. Here's space. Down here, the left-hand corner of the triangle, we have time. And over here, we have energy. Now, what on earth... How do you relate those things to experience? Well, that's very simple. Except you can't relate time to experience because that's an abstract, you know that. And space, of course, doesn't relate to experience either because, well, actually, how big is a piece of space? Well, it's as big as it's bounded. That's awfully suspicious. It's as big as it's bounded. And energy, well, nobody sees the motion of energy, so, but energy's obviously there, and we kind of take that one for granted, too. And now we know all about the material universe, and we don't need to know any more to relate this to experience, and now that we're all straightened out, why, just the realization that we know all about it should make us all clear. Well, it hasn't made physics clear, not clear for anybody, for an awful long time. It's been getting worse and worse and worse. They're at a frantic stage now. They have a mathematics born out of Planck's quantum of energy. And quantum mechanics are the most gorgeous mathematics, if you want to call them that you ever laid your eyes on. They throw three factors and a guess and equate it with a maybe, and they got it. Now, that is a symptom of getting frantic. By the way, they don't work anything. I'm sure they don't work anything, really, by quantum mechanics. I think they go in and they take bars of uranium or something and they juggle them around. Yeah, quick, write up the formula. Yeah, we found out it's this many bars and that much energy. Now, write up the formula, huh? That's right. That makes 40 millicuries. Now, put down the answer there. Now, write backwards. Now, we'll put in the constant and the C and the quantum, so on. Now, turn it into the front office, quick. I'm sure they must do it this way. All right. What can we put here, then? We know these three factors. What can we put here? There's something belongs here. Mm-hmm. Space is B. Let's relate this to experience. Space is B. Now, the reason space is B is because one can be without acting. Right? He doesn't require motion to be. Let's just look at that. But he would require, let us hypothesize, some space to be. He'd have to be where? Well, all right, there. But you notice also that even in the English language, the verb to be does not require an object. In fact, it can't take one.
All right. That's true in practically any language, by the way. In other words, beingness. Isness. Isness, all right? That's just space. That's simple. Be is space. Now, here you are. You're sitting in this space. Now, we could chop it off as far as time is concerned, and even though we chop that very thin and stop time down to zero, you'd still be in this room. You wouldn't fly out of this room just because we stopped time, but boy, you'd sure fly out of it if we stopped space. All right, so we have space is B. Well, now over here, we have time. And everybody knows that time is just an interrelationship. That's a very funny thing about time. Let me tell you how I ran into this. I kind of collided with this thing on a dark night with a pre-clear that was mighty skittish. I had tried everything on this pre-clear, and this pre-clear kept insisting that this symptom was still there, and the symptom was still there, and the symptom was still there, and the symptom was still there, and I started running, well, all right. She seemed so proud to have it. That was what started getting me. Now, get having it. Now, get not having it. Now, get having it. Now, get having to have it. Now, having not to have it. The dichotomy of have and not have, you see. Back and forth. She says it's gone. Oh. Now, I had run a lot of other things. And any one of those, I'd run responsibility, and I'd run this, and I'd run that, and I'd run other things, and papa and mama and husbands and pet cats and pet cows and anything I could think of. And all of a sudden, I ran that little simple dichotomy, which is the first time I ever ran it, by the way, and kaboom, the symptom's gone. So, not too long later, I run into this pre-clear, and this pre-clear is one of these can't see, can't hear, what space, what universe, what wall, sort of a normal. And I started running this and that, and this pre-clear was very anxious to get rid of a bad knee. So we started in on the basis of whose knee was it, and let's get a communication line through it. And he kept saying, yeah, what knee? And the knee, you know, the one you complained about. What? Oh, the knee, yeah. Yeah, all right. No? No, I don't like Chaucer. I mean, case was not very good. But I finally pinned the case's attention down on a number of things and ran a number of things, and we got a little bit of alleviation. We got a little bit of change of mind about this, and that person got happier. And all of a sudden I said, just out of thin air, well, now get having to have that knee, not having to have the knee, having to have, zig-dig. No knee pain. I thought, that's peculiar. In this whole mess, it suddenly occurs to one that having does not quite compare with being. There's something strange and peculiar about having that is different than these other things that sort of hits a button. Boom, hits this little button. And you can sometimes produce results with this confounded having and not having that you don't produce with this enormous battery of terrifically logical this and that. I mean, some of this stuff's almost as logical as Germanic logic. And havingness. So I was fooling around the other day, and you won't credit this when you first look at it. You won't credit it at all. But that's time. That actually works out to be time. Fantastic, but true. Time is have. Had, have, will have gives you a time track. Are you stopping? You stay to a pre-clear? Hey, by the way, take this little exercise right now. I say, mock up something. Just mock up anything. Now put it in yesterday. How'd you put it in yesterday? All right, now put it in present time. Now put it in tomorrow. How'd you get it into tomorrow? Sure, you moved it along and moved it back, but let's have it right there, right there. All right, let's put that item again that you thought up, and it's right there, right there. Now let's put it in yesterday. Can't do it? We were using space for time, and that's quite aberrated because a guy gets confused about it. All right, I want you to put here a little girl with curls. Little girl with curls, right in the middle of her forehead. This little girl with curls there. Now put her right there yesterday. Oh, yes, you can. You got her there right now? All right. Just remember, she was there yesterday. I said, though, put her in yesterday. That's part of the exercise. All right. Now, just remember, she was there yesterday. That's it. How could you put her in yesterday unless you did that? All right. Remember, she was in yesterday. Can you remember she was in yesterday? All right. Now, let's put her there tomorrow. Now, that's an easy one. That'll become on your consecutive track. Put her there tomorrow now. Put her there tomorrow. Now, how do you get her there tomorrow? I'll tell you the actual way you do it is you kind of say to yourself, well, I'll walk in tomorrow morning, that should be. Now let's go through that again. This will straighten you out on time faster than anything else I know. But this little girl here, I put her in yesterday. How do you get into yesterday? You just pretend she was there and you remember it. It's easy. All right, now let's put her in present time. Just put it right there. Get her good and solid. She shouldn't use pomade on her hair. put her right there. All right. Now, put her in tomorrow. How do you know she's going to be there tomorrow? All right. Now, blow her up. Actually, that's the way time works.